You're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. Do you want to speak with confidence and authority, have more influence, and get bigger and better results? Whether you're a top executive, an entrepreneur, or climbing the career ladder, this is the show for you. The leader who wants to inspire others and leave a lasting legacy. Now here's your host, world-renowned TEDx speaker, author, and executive communication coach, Dr. Laura Sekola.
Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sekola, your host, founder of Vocal Impact Productions and author of Speaking to Influence, Mastering Your Leadership Voice. My guest this week is Johan Reed, the first ever chief experience officer at Emburse, an expense management software company. Johan is responsible for delivering a world-class customer experience from first awareness through subscription renewal. Over the course of the last 25 years, Johan has served in a number of leadership roles, including chief marketing officer at Exactly Corporation and several executive leadership positions within SAP Global Marketing, including the first ever creative director for SAP. He's an evangelist for customer experience and has spoken to audiences in 18 different countries. Wow, Johan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Now, what is your fun fact aside from 18 countries? That sounds pretty darn fun to me.
Yeah, that's a fun fact. But the fun fact is that when I was a teenager, I was learning to drive and fly a plane at the same time. I mean, not at the same time, but in the same span of time. And I was actually landing airplanes before I had my driver's license.
Oh my gosh, that's not terrifying at all to all of us parents out there who have children who are barely learning to drive a car.
Parent now, I'm also like, who thought that was a good idea to let a teenager behind the yoke of an aircraft?
But you live to tell the tale, and hopefully so did everybody else. So that's super exciting. Do you still fly?
No, I don't. I never finished my license. I ran out of money, as teenagers do.
Oh, how disappointing that must have been. Is it still on the bucket list?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, now it's time. That's the big problem.
Yes, right. It's always one or the other, right? You have money or time, but never both.
Never both at the same time. Until you're retired, hopefully. So that's my retirement plan. Learn how to fly planes.
Love it. And what is the dream plane?
You know, I think just a really simple single engine piston plane has low cost of operation, something fun. I'm not super picky. Just want to be in the sky.
Just want to be in the sky, your own volition. That's awesome. Well, now tell us about Emburse. What is your 30-second elevator pitch?
Yeah, so Emburse is in the expense management space, which means we do travel and expense. Like if you've ever submitted an expense report, that's the kind of stuff that we do in addition to procurement cards, accounts payable. We have 18,000 customers in over 120 countries, and they range from small to large, Microsoft, General Mills, University of Pennsylvania Health System, Pizza Express in the UK, all kinds of companies, law firms. It's a really incredible business.
That's awesome. And in doing all of this, of course, look, everybody's got payment systems they need to work through. What is something that you wish more people understood about your role, about your company, or your industry? And what is your role in changing this perception?
Of the list, I think the least understood thing is my role. A chief experience officer is kind of a new thing. You don't see a lot of people with titles like mine. Mm. And, you know, I had the really great opportunity to define my own role, basically. And I would characterize it as bringing the two teams within a business, the team that makes the promise and the team that keeps the promise, together. Mm. So I lead a marketing organization as well as customer success. And I really am here to help the company rationalize the promises that we make to make sure that what we say we can do, we can actually deliver. And then actually deliver on the things that we say that we do so that customers don't end with disappointment because they thought they were getting one thing, but then in fact got something different. So that's the role. And I think the big misconception around it is that, and I've been talking a lot about this on stage at our Emburse Emotion events, where people have this idea that a great customer experience has to be a Ritz-Carlton type of experience. And that's not really true. Like what's really true is that the best experience is when you meet the customer's expectations. And so that's what I've been evangelizing, is that we just really have to set the expectation with that promise and then meet that expectation. It doesn't have to be a luxury experience. In fact, that doesn't always work. Go to the gas station. Think about how weird that would be if they came and treated you like you were at the Ritz. They'd be slowing you down, right? So that's a lot of what I've been doing to try to combat the misconceptions about the role and to evangelize it as a new role that executive teams should be considering adding to the C-suite at their companies.
That's interesting. So number one, I've always liked the definition of brand as the notion of the promise of an experience and the experience of a promise delivered, and that beautifully mutually reinforcing cycle. So if a company doesn't have a chief experience officer, you mentioned that your role is ensuring that the two teams, the one that's in charge of making the promise and the one that's in charge of keeping the promise, are in sync with each other. So the team that makes the promises, are we talking the marketing team, the sales team, something else?
It's everybody who's involved before the contract gets signed. So okay. Anybody involved in communicating to a customer before they become a customer is in some way making a promise, whether they own the website or they're having a sales conversation, whether it's an executive doing an executive sponsorship conversation. Everybody who speaks with the customer before they become a customer, the prospect, they're on that team until the contract gets signed.
And then the team that's in charge of delivering the promise, who's entailed in that?
In some cases, it's the same people, right? An executive, theoretically, if you have an executive sponsor for a customer, they're on board through the whole journey. But generally, it starts with delivery. So in the software space, we have a professional services team that comes in and helps get the customer set up and running on the product. We have a customer success team who acts effectively as the quarterback. So they're typically working with the customer over the long term, making sure the customer has the resources that they need. But there's also the support team. There's the engineering team, the product team, making sure that innovation keeps being delivered. Or if we made commitments about adding features to the product to support this customer or a specific industry, that we follow that through and deliver on our roadmap. So it's everybody else in the business who touches the customer once the contract is signed.
And what is your role as a conduit? How do you personally serve as conduit between these two teams? I get what each of them needs to respectively do. Why do they need a chief experience officer there to act?
Because if I'm not here and they have separate executive leaders, they're not integrating, they're collaborating. And that's my function and my role. And really what I've brought to the party here is this intent to integrate the organization and also integrate more heavily with all of those other teams that I talked about. And so really helping both marketing and customer success recognize that they are innately linked with one another, and then figuring out how to increase that linkage with sales and support and these other teams.
So I love that distinction. And I think that's really important as businesses. There's a lot of people out there I know who are small business owners who are scaling, and others who are parts of larger organizations and need to be collaborating with other parts of the organization, but that distinction between integration and collaboration and really thinking about the inherent difference in those definitions. And of course, what that would mean on a logistical level and an actual execution level, much less a planning level, with all those moving parts. So I think that's a great point of distinction, whether it's in trying to evangelize these messages and execute your own role or something else. Did you ever think that you did a great job of explaining something only to have the listener look at you like a deer in the headlights?
Yeah, I think we've all been there. Early in my career, I moved from engineering into pre-sales. And as an engineer, I was very structured and I thought very methodical in the way I was explaining everything. And I learned the product that I was selling, and I would go into the customer and I would tell them all about my product and how great my company was and how they should work with us. And then oftentimes the customer would sort of tune out. I was an hour into a two-hour meeting and they were all on their Blackberries. I'm dating myself a little bit, but you know, the Blackberries would come out and people were sort of looking out the window, and I was losing my audience, and I couldn't figure out why I was losing my audience. And then I realized that over time, and the worst part of this, Laura, was that I kept making the same mistake over and over again. And I kept trying to solve it the same way, which is I have to get better at talking about my product. You know, I need more cool visuals. The visuals will help. And I tried a whole bunch of things and nothing worked. And it wasn't until I realized that, much like dating, a conversation has to be a give and take. And you actually have to demonstrate a lot more interest in the other person versus talking about yourself. And that's what I did. And I started talking about the customer and I talked about their problems. And I tried to use all of the information I gathered in the discovery part of our sales cycle to really come up with what is their narrative. And then I sort of came back to them with their narrative and I put the pieces together and I looked at their problems through my solution lens. And I then realized that the more I talked to them about them, the more successful I became. And that's led me to this whole outside-in approach that I use in all of my communications and all of my marketing work.
Sales in many ways is like dating. There is that massive courtship period, really, until you decide whether or not you want to commit, at least for a certain period of time, to really working together. So now, did I understand correctly that you had a sales role for a while? Were you also a technologist? Were you a developer at some point?
I started as a database application developer, and I wrote customer databases. And then I did a CRM implementation, and then wound up getting hired into pre-sales by the company whose product I had implemented. I did a customer reference demo, and I guess they liked what they saw.
Because that's uncommon for usually someone who loves all the social aspect of sales is not so much inclined towards the mechanics. Forgive the term for anybody out there who is a developer. I realize it's not the right way to term it, but the mechanics of the actual development and those who are really masterful at the actual developing typically will do anything not to have to actually talk to a customer and engage in all that salesy kind of stuff. So you managed to have the balance, have a one foot on each side of the line, so to speak. It sounds like there was blessing and curse in that the curse part was what you just sort of described, which is forgetting that the audience didn't perhaps need to know and want to know all of the technical facets and details and features that you thought were really cool and technically were at some point or other. So, okay, learning to redirect that away from that expert's curse. But how would you describe the greatest blessing in being able to do both? How did you bridge that divide from development into sales?
Well, and the blessing is that I could always speak credibly with the people that I was selling to. I sold these systems into IT organizations. So I had somebody who was an engineer or a database person sitting across the table from me. Mm. And so the credibility that came with that, as you point out, the curse is, and I still struggle with this today, is I tend to be overly elaborative in my explanation. Like I give you all the details, even if you don't want them. So that's something that even today as an executive, I struggle with. But that helped me in my career tremendously in the technology space. And you asked about the question of bridging the divide, and it's really about creativity. Developers, engineers have a huge amount of creativity. And that was where I saw in my work was the application of creativity to solving problems and dealing with coding challenges or data challenges. And then as I jumped over the fence and started using my coding and technology capability to solve customer problems and then talk to them about it, I found that my creativity was a real asset in how I communicated with them. Because then I was able to do really cool PowerPoint slides to explain the business process behind it and apply my creativity just in a different way.
I think that's such a challenge for so many people to be able to bridge that divide between the expertise on the technical side and the translation and the interaction with a broader level or broader range, I should say, of audiences. So kudos to you for figuring out how to do that. Now, what have you personally allowed yourself to be emotionally vulnerable with your team, and how did it impact your relationship with them moving forward?
Well, I was working at SAP and I was a relatively new manager leading a team. I think I had 8 people on my team. And I was in the middle of a difficult divorce, more at the early stage of that. And we were at the largest trade show that we ran every year. So I was on the show floor, I was working in the booth. And, you know, my team knew a little bit about what was going on, but I hadn't shared too much with them. And I got an email from my attorney saying that the judge had ordered me to move out of my home.
Ouch.
Which was also my workplace.
Oof.
I just broke down and I cried. There were 25,000 people there that day, and I was crying in the middle of all of them. And my team came to my side, and we had this huge group hug, and it was so wonderful to feel so supported. And it changed the dynamic because they saw me as a person. I wasn't just a manager. I was a human being with real feelings and real challenges in my life. And they, I think, had a new appreciation for what I was giving to them as their leader while I was dealing with my own personal challenges. And it was really beautiful because they went on to continue to support me. They helped me celebrate my birthday that year. And it was a real connective moment for me with them. And it led me to understand that I can be vulnerable. I can be really open about what I'm dealing with. I don't have to overshare. I mean, that's a whole different thing. But
right.
If I'm honest about the challenges I'm facing, in other facets of my life, then I give the people on my team who are all really good human beings with hearts the opportunity to support me, which feels good to them, and also gives them permission to be honest about what's going on in their lives and allows them to ask me for a little extra support when they need it.
Gosh, well, number one, I'm so sorry that happened. Wow, ouch. That's all I can say on that one. So you seem to have weathered the storm, so I'm glad.
Well, the good news is that I have a fabulous relationship with my ex, and we've raised our son together. He's turning 18 this year.
Good. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. And I'm also really glad that you drew an important point of distinction, which is that transparency is not an all or none thing. It's about allowing people to see in, but not just taking all your laundry and scattering it across Main Street, you know, that for the world to see. So being a little emotionally vulnerable judiciously at times does not mean oversharing. That was your distinction. And I think a lot of people who don't share at all are afraid that once there's a little crack in the door, everything escapes. And some will be on the other side, not realizing that, yes, you're transparent, but perhaps you may want to dial it back a bit. So the judiciousness and the degree is really the key. You can be transparent without oversharing. That is possible and frankly necessary. I mean, that ability to gauge. Now, this actually would be a great time to head into a different kind of a challenge, because I'm sure that was a challenging moment unto itself. But let's go to the influence challenge of the day, Johan. This is your opportunity to talk to our audience, speaking to them directly and challenging them to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
I would challenge them to go to everybody in their business and ask them how the work that they do as individual contributors, as managers, as executives, how does the work they do impact the customer experience?
So let me make sure that I'm understanding. So the listeners should go to someone else in their own company and they should ask that person how that person's work affects the customer experience.
Nope. Or work. Ask everyone around you. Go out. Everybody that you run into, instead of, hi, how are you today? Ask them, hey, how does your work impact the customer experience?
Wow.
And hopefully you're going to get a lot of really great answers. You're probably going to get some vague answers and blank looks for people, especially people who might work in HR or in accounting who don't interact with customers. And so this is the challenge, is to see how you can get everybody in your business thinking about the customer, even if they don't think that they have any meaningful impact to that customer.
Now, I'm curious because the understanding that the listeners out there are a wide range of people. Some are business owners or executives, and others are, you know, of all different walks of life one way or another. So if they take you up on this challenge, and I wholeheartedly encourage everyone to do exactly that, no matter what, with the expectation that there will probably be some people who will say, I don't know. What message should we take from that?
Well, first of all, I think it's totally expected. Mm-hmm. Again, if you talk to somebody who's like a benefits administrator in HR, or, you know, if you're an entrepreneur and you're focused on more of the back office operations and you have a business partner who deals with all the client-facing stuff, right? Sometimes we get lost in our day-to-day. And so the real challenge here is when you get an I don't know, to start digging in, to find the time to work with that person to say, okay, let's think this through. So you're a benefits administrator. How does that ultimately affect the customer? Well, if employees have good benefits and employees are happy because they have good benefits, then your customer-facing employees are happier when they talk to customers. There's an impact, right? Take the time, map it out, figure it out, because every employee comes to work for a reason. And if you give them the bigger reason, more than just, hey, you're going to work with these people, if you say, look, I get a lot of value out of, and again, I'm talking now to the listeners who do work with customers, right? If you can go to them and say, I get a lot of value out of my interactions with customers, and I want to help you see how you impact those customers, that gives the person that you're talking to a huge sense of my work is doing something greater. And that's what I experience every day. When I go and meet with different people within our business at Embers, I'm always asking them what they're doing to impact the customer experience. And if they don't know it, I spend as much time as it takes to walk through it. And it's really remarkable when you see folks who have these more back office kind of jobs, when they start to really connect the dots and say, oh, okay, well, now I know why what I'm doing matters beyond just my colleagues or my internal customer. it gives them a sense of connectedness when we talk about the company making its numbers, because now they understand that they're contributing to making those numbers.
Yes, I think everybody understands the value of their role. They all know that they're doing something that matters. Just about everybody does. And if you don't, maybe time to look for a new job at that point. But that's a whole different show. But otherwise, it just to help people really figure out, no, you do have a, it may be indirect, but nonetheless important influence on the customer's experience. I think that's really beautiful. And now tell me about a time when you needed to assert yourself powerfully.
Oh boy, you have lots of opportunities as an executive to have to assert yourself powerfully. I spent 15 years at SAP, mm-hmm. and it's a big company with lots of politics and powerful personalities. And I had this idea that I wanted to reinvent the way we did our events. And I had to pitch that idea to this executive leadership team. And I couldn't come in with sort of a half-baked, hey, I've got a good idea. I would have gotten eaten alive. So I had to go in and be assertive about my belief that this was the right thing for the business. I had to be unemotional in the sense of what has come before was great, but now it's time for us to do something different, and then be really excited about that. I had to be backed with data. I couldn't go in with a good idea and a bunch of smoke. And most importantly, I had to do a lot of one-on-one with key stakeholders because they each had different agendas. And so I had to manage all of that in the background and not allow their agendas to override my own. Mm-hmm. And also to work on the trade-offs between their agendas, because obviously people who are responsible for creating demand and pipeline internationally have different objectives than what the brand team might need. So really being assertive about the vision and keeping everybody focused on the vision, but then all of the backroom management of stakeholders and agendas and all of that stuff to drive it to completion.
So when you talk about, and this is an important point too, that I think a lot of people struggle with, you mentioned not letting other people's agendas kind of hijack the conversation or take over. Hijack was my word, but I assume that's a reasonable paraphrasing. So how did you do that? Was that about the work you did behind the scenes in advance in order to ensure that that didn't happen? Or were there tactics that you used in the meeting itself, if it sounds like there was at least one major meeting of the minds where all those stakeholders with their own respective agendas and responsibilities were present together? How did you keep everybody focused and specifically focused on what you wanted to talk about?
Two things. One, I definitely had lots of one-on-one meetings with the different stakeholders where I clearly articulated how my vision served them and I stayed focused on their need. I didn't go to the macro like, oh, it's good for the business. I really focused on, you're responsible for creating demand in Europe. Here's why this approach is going to be better for you. But then when you have, whenever you have conflict, I always think I have to find the lens where there's agreement between the two parties to start from. And in this case, the agreement was, let's do the right thing for the customer. So whenever I was in a situation where people's agendas were either independently going to try to hijack my plan and my vision, or where they were in conflict, I was able to fall back on, we all want to do the right thing for the customer and we want to create the best experience for them. So let's stay focused on that. And then since each of them knew that I was really clear about what the benefits were for them individually, and I reminded them why we were doing this in the first place, which is for the customer and ultimately the revenue and the health of the business, that got everybody over any of the log jams that we had along the way. And I was really successful in driving a vision to conclusion, where when I stood on the floor at our biggest show of the year, it looked a lot like what I had envisioned on paper a year before.
Yes. So it sounds like it really helped to have done all of your homework in advance, getting the buy-in from each person one-on-one, at least preliminarily, and not just getting them to say yes, but where, and this goes back to your original question to answer as far as the learning curve and not just talking about what you wanted to accomplish, but really speaking into what the other people's respective challenges, objectives, needs, wants, desires, pressures, et cetera, so that when it did come time to talk to the group altogether, you could specifically address how your approach was relevant and going to address all the respective needs of everybody who was there with a best practices for all kind of approach. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. Yes. And I'll give you one more thing that I used to great effect, which is the improv model of yes and. Mm. And I got so many asks in this process. One of the asks I had was to build a river beneath the show floor with clear panels so that you could see the water flowing as though it were data to connect all the pieces of the show. Now, you know, this involves jacking up the show floor and building a whole river system. You can imagine what it takes to execute something like that. Senior executives also don't like to be told no.
Whose idea was the river running through
the floor? It was the executive's idea. And okay. I was asked, hey, can you add that in? Can you implement this in this show? And so I said, yes, of course I can. Totally happy to do that. And then I went back and I explained the labor, the costs, all of the technology that would be required and what the total cost to the business was. And he immediately relented and was very much of the mind that maybe that's a little bit more than we needed. And I offered an alternative solution. So I think for your listeners, I think that's one of the things to bear in mind is if you approach this from a yes, we can do it, it's only going to take resources.
Right.
So if it's important enough to you that I need your help to give me the resources to go and execute the thing, I'm going to need another 50 people and $5 million. Totally doable.
Right.
And then they're like, wait a minute, where am I going to get 50 million, 50 people and $5 million right. to give to you? Now it's their problem, not your problem. Right.
Right.
And they're also seeing that you're collaborative. And then when you propose option B, hey, we could do it with some interesting light rigging and we can create light paths on the floor for significantly less money because we're going to rig the lighting for the show anyway. Suddenly now that option becomes really palatable. If I would have charged in and said, no, you can't have that. I can give you this other thing. Well, now that's really unappealing. So that's my yes and in these situations when you get an unreasonable ask and you're trying to navigate all these stakeholders who all have their thing that they want. That's one of my tools that I use.
I think that's terrific. And it really turns it more into the Jerry Maguire kind of help me help you. Sure, I can give you exactly what you want. And here's what it'll cost. Oh, help me help you. All I need is the 5 million and, you know, 50 people and I can get you exactly what you want. And it's so much easier when they say, so what would plan B look like exactly? When they solicit plan B, it makes it much nicer than when you just suggest downplaying it and maybe aiming your sights a little lower. Then it's a whole different framing, isn't it?
It is.
Well, Johan, I love where this conversation has gone and it makes me sad that we are just about out of time. So before we do, can you tell us please, how can people learn more about you and Embers?
They can learn about me on my LinkedIn profile. Please connect with me there. I'd love to carry the conversation forward. And you can learn all about Embers at embers.com.
And of course, we will have all of those links in the show notes so you can find it absolutely anytime. I have had such a nice time talking with you today. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Laura. I've had a ton of fun.
And to everybody else out there, thank you as always for listening in. Be sure to subscribe if it's your first time joining us so that you never miss an episode. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, so we can help even more people increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, of course, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Laura Sokola, and I want to sincerely thank you for listening to the Speaking to Influence podcast. If you love listening to these episodes as much as I love bringing them to you, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And please go to iTunes right now to rate and review our podcast in order to help us expand our reach so even more people can master the 3 C's to command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.